You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management, archaeology, and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 312. And today I'm joined by Andrew in Southern California.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? And what's up?
And that's it. It's the Heather and Andrew show.
Or hey, what's up?
The Andrew and Heather show.
Yeah,
I know.
Thank you.
Insist on the top billing. So it's the Andrew and Heather show. So today we thought we would talk about diversifying. Let's find solutions. I think a lot of people right now are nervous about their prospects in this discipline. And Andrew and I are here to tell you there is hope and do not give up. Do not let this, everything that's going on right now and all the sky is falling talk. And this is not to be at all dismissive of what's going on. Not at all. I know people are concerned and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. But I think we need to find hope and see the silver lining here, and that there's definitely a viable career in CRM. And today we're going to talk about that. We're going to give you some strategies on how to set yourself up. So, you know, anything in life, when there's a downturn and everybody else is thinking that there is no hope, the people that take advantage of that moment in time are usually the ones that are successful long-term. So let's talk about how we can set everybody up, our listeners up, to be successful long-term and take this opportunity where others are finding, I don't know, hopelessness.
Yeah.
And setting you up to be successful long-term.
I think that right there is just super important to think of the situation in that way, to use this moment and push yourself ahead, because a lot of people will give up. A lot of people will be like, oh, I'll never make it. Sky is falling. And I think both of us, you and I, Heather, have heard this a bunch of times. And what's funny is I hear this a lot, but I don't actually see it in terms of like maybe old students of mine or whatever. Everyone still has jobs. Like, I haven't seen all my old students come back to Moorpark and be like, we're here to be nurses now because there's just no archaeology. And trust me, I would see stuff like that if it really was that bad. And just like you, I'm not here to say, oh, don't listen to the news whatsoever and just live off the grid. But I am here to say, I think in agreement with you, that it's not all doom and gloom. It's just more complex, and just be ready for it. Just use the data at hand and then set yourself up for success in the future.
Yeah. And I think so let's just be the old guys in the room, people in the room and say, listen, we've been in this for a while. Andrew's been in it longer than me.
That's right, Heather.
And I'm telling you, we've seen every flavor of the same ice cream, every flavor of this, our whole careers. There's just a different iteration of CRM sucks. We love it. We're in it for the passion of archaeology, but this is like the worst. I can't tell you, Bill has shared the most recent, and I'm seeing it on social media too, the most recent of archaeology is one of the worst paid careers that you can go into. I tell you, that comes up. Archaeology, anthropology has come up just about every year on some list. And I don't know why people are so wants that are like, I don't know, flies to a flame. When you do that, you get burned up. Don't be the one who turns the other direction. That's where you're going to find success. Yep. Because, you know, you're going, there's so many aspects of why anthropology, archaeology might make that list. And after doing this for over 20 years, I think that really, it is, it's mainly the anthropology is like one of the worst careers, because people get into anthropology or they get the anthropology degree. It's like the communications degree, right? Communications was really popular in the late 1990s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Because people went to college and they didn't know what they wanted to do. And communications was just this general thing they could take and get a degree and say they have a bachelor's or associate's or whatever. The anthropology is the new thing, right? And so whenever you have them, people come out and they have no direction and they just got anthropology as a degree, but they didn't really have any direction of what they want to do. Then that means, yeah, your prospects of making a lot of money many times are not good if you do not have a plan moving forward. And that's what this podcast is about, is we want to have a plan moving forward. So if you got an anthropology degree just so that you could get a degree, of course, we're going to, those kind of people are going to fall into that category of not making good money. Anyone that does not have a goal and does not have a plan to get to that goal is not going to do well in life, period. That's just not a recipe for success, no matter what you're doing.
Exactly. And I've seen this when I was in college. I was a double major in archaeology and film, and both of those can be seen as very esoteric. Both of those could make the list of like losers with no jobs list. But what mattered was in both those instances, I did it with a real idea of what I wanted to do and also with a real idea of getting skills, like getting a skill set. So as I went through them in the archaeology world, I went on the digs. I took the like field methods classes. I learned the skill set to make me employable. In the film world, I took like the screenwriting classes and I took the like hands-on stuff to make me employable, right? So in both of those worlds, I could go forward. But just like you're saying, I knew so many people who just like, were not the squeaky wheel who got the grease, who just went class to class and then got their degree. And then it's, you have a degree that says this thing, but it means nothing. You have no skills. You don't even know what you're doing. So it's funny. It's not even about the degree so much. It's about how you focus it and having that focus.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think for me, when I'm hiring, looking for people, I'm not looking for somebody. It actually, in some cases, yes, we're looking for somebody with an archaeology degree, an anthropology degree. Yes, we are looking for that. But I'm more looking for the skills that you have on your resume, the experience that you have, or your trainability to get those skills. And I'm looking for somebody that has a business side, a business, even if you have a minor in business,
right,
or somebody with some kind of practical skill set that can help me in more than just the excavation, analysis.
Yeah.
I'm as a manager and a practice director, I am so bogged down with so many different tasks that I have to do that people are not trained to help me with. And I'm so busy that it's difficult for me to train them to get to that point that if somebody comes across my desk that has those skill sets, I'm going to literally beg you to come and work for us because I need some relief. I can't be that one man band or one gal band. So anyway, let's get in and talk about some strategies. I think let's talk to the people that are getting out of college now with a BA.
Right.
Okay. Or an MA, both, right?
Yeah.
Because neither one of you have any experience. So, like you're both newbies. And yes, you have an MA, that's great. That does give you some other avenues to pursue, but you're still in the same boat. You still have no more success than the person with, unless you were in CRM while you were getting your MA.
Yeah.
Andrew.
Yes.
What are you hearing from students when they graduate? Like, as far as their,
like their, what their like hopes and dreams or their, what's funny is the specific students who I deal with a lot are the ones who take all the Saturday classes, right? Who take all the methods classes. So they're almost, in a way, they're almost the perfect terrible examples for this, because I've hammered them into getting some skills and getting like interactions with other CRM firms and stuff. They're just getting poached all the time. Like they're always just, the company called me and I think I'm going to take this job. And I don't mean to sugarcoat it and say this life is easy, but right now at this moment, a lot of them are having success at least at the low end. And, right. But they're also reasonable. They're not coming in going, I demand $75 an hour and a palatial estate. It's like they know that this is their first gig and it's basic. So they're moving forward with that. And they're also looking toward grad school at the same time.
Right.
And that's all over the place, too.
Okay. I think that there's a bit of a bias because I know that you set up your students to do that. You set up your students to. So let's talk to the students that maybe haven't been set up by their professors. The one thing I will tell you from a hiring perspective, the attitude you want to have is Johnny on the spot or Jane on the spot. Anything that they bring across your desk or that they ask you to do it, obviously not unethical stuff, but if they ask you, can you do this task? Let's say they need somebody to order a bunch of supplies for a project. That's what I need you to do. Okay.
Right.
I could see some people wait a minute. I didn't go to school to be your supply inventory specialist.
Yeah.
I've got news for you. In archaeology, yes, that's part of your job. It's part of my job. But from a hiring manager perspective, if you can do something like that and you're willing to jump in and do it, and you can alleviate my numerous different tasks, I'm going to love you. I'm going to, anything that you can make my job easier. And that's the attitude you have to have. Mm-hmm. Anything that you can do to make the person who's hiring their job easier, the more work you're going to get, the easier time you're going to have getting a full-time position.
Yeah, I love that example. I love that example you just gave because I could see so many young people or people just fresh into this being like, I don't know how to order stuff. What? And just sitting there and like doing nothing. I don't know. Wait, no. Can you do this for me? It's no. Figure it out. And that, I swear, that's almost like 50% of the whole thing. Will you sit there and figure it out? Right. Because if you don't do it, I'll have to sit there and figure it out. And I don't feel like it. I got bigger fish to fry. So sit there and figure out how to order me some extra trowels. So do it.
Think about when you were in school.
Yeah.
This happens all the time. And you put something off. I know you never do this, but you put something off and you're like, you just feel it's daunting. I've never done this before.
Right.
I don't want to do this because I don't even know where to start. You need to start at some point. So just start now.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, think about in the crevices of your mind, every time you've had that experience and any time in life, you put it off because you weren't quite sure where to start. And it was just swirling in your head. Once you did it, you sat back and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a lot easier than I thought it would be. That, I'm telling you, majority of the things you're going to be asked to do, that's going to be your experience. Most of this stuff is not brain science, right? Most of this stuff does not. Now, if somebody says, here's a GPR equipment, I want you to go by yourself and figure it out.
Yeah.
And you have to do this in 8 hours because I need it done so that we can add it to our analysis. Okay, that's something you can't do. Right. But there are a majority of the tasks that a CRM, like a PI or a project manager is going to ask you to do, are something that you can figure out just by sticking to it and doing it. One thing is, I had somebody that's working for me right now. I need somebody who can go in and start looking for projects that are coming into municipalities that are open bid, right? Mm. For cities, counties. I need somebody to be mining all these websites and finding work for us, right? So I could sit back and say, oh, we've got this many people on staff. We got this much work. That's good. But no, I want to grow. I want to continue to grow. And so this person is like, I need work. Please. Okay. You know what? Are you willing to do this? You willing to go and look on these websites? And they're like, I don't even know where to start. Listen, I don't know either.
Yeah.
But if you can figure it out and you can get a SOP, a standard operating procedure and figure this out and you start bringing in work for us, that's golden. That's like perfect for you. So let's go on to the next segment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to CRM Archaeology Podcast episode 312. And this is segment 2. We are talking about how to diversify, how to strategies to make sure that you can make it through this, what everybody is saying is a troubling time. And we're saying is a time of opportunity to build your skill set and to separate yourself from the masses. So in general, the last segment, we were just talking about being available, not first of all, looking for opportunities to be available in any way that a company needs you. And that is what's going to keep you working. I just want to kind of finish that thought up with what does doing tasks that you wouldn't normally think would go along with CRM, what does it do for you? Number one, it gives you an eye into what CRM really is. It's not just about digging STPs.
What?
It's not about data recovery, surveys, doing record searches. It's not just about that. In fact, I would say that's a smaller portion than the rest of it. It is about managing projects. It's about getting your supplies. It's about bringing in new work. It's about managing people. It's about managing inventory, looking at new ways to be more efficient. All these things are what makes someone in CRM successful, not only in length of your career, but also in the success and how you move up. The earlier that you can get that experience in your career, the better. The other thing that it gives you is it gives you face time with people that have the opportunity, or that people that have at their fingertips an ability to push you along in your career. So the more face time that you get with experienced CRM professionals, the better it is for you. People think, oh, look at all the monitoring that I have. Look at all the surveys that I have. And that's great. I'm glad you have. But if I see somebody who's done a majority of monitoring, I actually see a lot of people with MAs, and they have all the work experience that I see on their resume is like monitoring, surveys, things like that. There's nothing in there that they've led anything. There's nothing in there that they've managed to make setting up projects, earning work, even just making sure that the field supplies are taken care of and ready to go. These are practical skill sets that are invaluable to someone like myself or other CRM companies. So it also gives you an opportunity to interact with either a hiring manager or a project manager or a principal investigator. And the more interaction you have with that person, and the less you take off their plate, the more they're going to love you and the more they're going to want around.
I can just think of an in-class exercise I did with my CRM class that worked really well. I just came in and I was like, I need some carbon 14 dates. And they're like, I'm like, yeah, I need some carbon 14 dates. You need to look up the companies around here and what they charge. And it actually ended up being really good because everyone had computers. They had to look it up. They had to look up how much it was per sample, what kind of sample. And then we made a master list of all the companies and what they charge and all this kind of stuff. And something that simple gives you the skill set of, now I know where to get carbon 14 dates. So it's if you're working at a CRM firm and they're like, does anybody know where to send? You can be like, yeah, actually send to these guys. And so that kind of skill set, not just going, if I go, I need some carbon 14 dates, not going, but I don't know what, I can't. It's yes, you can. You have a phone. You can Google C14 dates and go from there. And again, then you have that knowledge.
Or worse, I'm too good for that, or that's not right. Why I went to school. And I didn't go to school to go and buy shovels for you.
Yeah,
I've been
doing
this for over 20 years, and I'm not talking about me personally, but this is what I'm saying. Hey, listen, bud, I've been doing this for 30 years. I've got a an MA or whatever. I manage this entire practice. Do you think I should be going and buying the shovels? That's not saying that I go and buy shovels all the time. Don't think you're too good for something. And don't think that it's more than you can bite off. I'm telling you, let's say, for example, that I brought up before, this person that just wanted hours. I said, okay, this is what I want you to do. Or she started buying supplies for me and she likes bargain shopping. I'm like, great, go for it. Or I had somebody else that did something else. They're like, I don't know where to start with this. And I'm like, listen, just give it your best shot. Just give it your best shot. This is a safe place. I'm not going to get upset with you. You can ask me questions, but you try to answer questions first. And that news for you, people, you're getting paid to do this. So whatever they're willing to give you, you're getting paid to do it, even if you've never done it before. And here's the answer you give. Listen, I haven't done that before, but I'm willing to learn and I will give it my best shot. Mm-hmm. That's what you say. So you're being honest. I haven't done this before, but I am going to work my patootie off to get this done for you.
Yeah. Or I'd say some version of, hey, I've never done this before. If I had to do this, I would do this and this. Does that make some sort of sense?
Okay. That's
run it by them. Yeah.
And draw on your resources. Let's say you have to do supplies. You have to buy all these supplies. Is your mom a shopper? Does your dad do inventory? Look at your inner circle and see, what does my aunt do? What does my uncle do? What does my mom and dad do? What can they help me with? And start drawing on their resources. And trust me, this is a winning strategy. I'm just telling you, it's a winning strategy. So number two, let's look at this other misnomer that, okay, I'm in Pennsylvania. This is where I've done my work, or this is where I went to school. This is the experience I have. And this is where I should be getting my work. What do you think? What do you think about that, Andrew?
Yeah, I say stay in Pennsylvania. We don't want you in California. There.
Now is the time, especially if you're right out of college, now's the time to gain as much experience as you can possibly gain. And I'll tell you why. And this may just be, I hear this a lot, it's a misunderstanding. People are like, the farther out that I go, the more experience I need to have as an archaeologist. Not true. The more experience you have as an archaeologist, the more I have to pay you. You right now are so usable in any realm. It is actually an advantage when you start off. As long as you're trainable and you have a good attitude and you're capable, right now in the beginning of your career, now's the time to get as much experience as you can. Why? What do you think, Andrew, is the most attractive thing about people coming out of college?
I'm going to go with the ability to buy me a club sandwich when I need one. Yes?
I guess that's a good
way. Oh, they better be able to. They better know where to get the best club sandwich. That's what I need.
Yes, that's definitely a skill set. The other is, you have the advantage that you have is that you can be built out at the lower rate.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's more work. Look at it as a pyramid. And there's more work for people that are built out at a lower rate. The more experience that you have, the higher the education that you have, the higher your billing rate is going to be. And as you move up, the fewer positions there are.
Yep.
So right now you have way more opportunity as a beginning archaeologist. So take advantage of that and work everywhere that you can. So don't look at it and say, oh, I can't, I'm in Pennsylvania, I'm not going to go after any work in California.
Yeah.
Know the reality of it. You're not going to get a one-day survey in California. But if there's projects, companies have projects with, or you're working for a company in Pennsylvania, and that company also has projects in California and they need people and they have the budget to be putting them up and per diem and hotel, then take that opportunity to get it on your resume as experience in California.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, no, I was just going to agree. And I think it's so interesting, too, that state by state, they have these different, these different requirements and needs. I never knew this until fairly recently, because California, to my knowledge, has none. Yep. I've only worked in two states. I've worked in California and a little bit in Arizona. And the Arizona part was really on the California-Arizona border. So I've just gone job to job. So, how does that work?
California, correct, does not have any specific requirement. Now, some companies may have a specific requirement for you. And there are some cities, like I'll say, for instance, San Diego. San Diego is difficult to crack that market because to work in the city of San Diego, you have to have had experience working in the city of San Diego. So there's, it's difficult to crack that market. So I wouldn't say across California, you can get work anywhere, but for the most part, it's one of the states that's the easiest to get work in. And it's got the most work. Probably, that's probably why it doesn't have a whole lot of regulations, because we need, with respect to who can work there, because we need as many people as we can get.
Yeah, I was always curious about that. The other states that have these requirements, it's like, are they just trying to bogart the jobs for themselves or something? No. I always felt that was a little odd.
So you brought up the other one is Arizona. Arizona and New Mexico, those are like, they're like really difficult to work
in. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of requirements. So here's another opportunity that you have. It's starting in your career. Anytime that a company has like these certain, there are certain states, I would say Utah's in there too, but you have New Mexico, you have Arizona. Let's just talk about those two. It's difficult as somebody for a principal investigator to go in and to get, be able to get a principal investigator license or a permit to work. It's impossible if you have not worked in that state before. And if you are already a principal investigator level, very few people are going to hire you if you don't have experience in that at the rate of a principal investigator, because you cannot work as a principal investigator in that state.
Right.
So when you get the experience is when you are in the beginning of your career. That's when you get the experience.
That's my next question. So if I'm trying to get into one of these hard to crack states and I'm just low-end, non-manager. Right. Can I just get hired? Are most of these laws for the more managerial higher end?
Exactly.
Okay, good. Yeah. Because I was like, I worked in Arizona and I didn't think it was any big deal. So that makes sense.
So a lot of, just we'll go over real quick why this is. So there's when states are creating, so this actually goes to some of this argument that's, or some of these topics that are hot right now, when it comes to NEPA. So a lot of the regulations in states are centered around the regulations with NEPA. So when NEPA was created, the facilitators are those that are supposed to make sure that NEPA is carried out in the way that it's supposed to, are these state entities. And in most cases, in most states, they're called state historic preservation officers, SHPOs. And for the most part, that's the general term. There are different states that have different terms for them. But for the most part, most states call them state historic preservation officer. And no matter what, that's what they are. That SHPO office or whatever the entity is in that state create regulations in how NEPA is going to be performed in that state relative to cultural resources. And so when they created those regulations, they had specific requirements for who is going to be able to lead investigations and who's going to be able to get a permit to lead an investigation.
Right.
When you get to California, you can work anywhere in the state. Now, we're not talking about federal lands, but because there's so many state regulations in California, you can work in California, get the experience in California that then you can use to get permits to work on state lands and federal lands. There are still a lot more requirements in California to work on state and federal lands, but because you have so much opportunity to get experience in California on private land, on private projects, you can build your experience there and then you can go and get jobs that are a little bit harder to get because there's more requirements.
Right.
So there are some states that on projects on private lands don't even need really an assessment unless there's some kind of federal trigger. Mm-hmm. So it's all based on different level of requirements. So in those states where the private land requirements really aren't there, you'll see more of a focus on in order to work in the state, it's based on those NEPA requirements, the facilitation of NEPA in that state. And so in New York or New Mexico and Arizona, even to work in Arizona and New Mexico, you have to have a permit. You have to put in for a permit to do certain things, to do a survey, to do any kind of excavation, to put any kind of shovel in the ground. You have to have a permit to do that. Mm-hmm. In California, you have to have a permit to do that on state lands, but on private land, you don't. Right. So that is what is driving what the requirements are. And so each state has already set these up. In some states, for instance, Utah has specific regions that archaeological regions that are required that you have experience before you can actually be a principal investigator. There are three regions in Utah. You have to have experience in at least one of them. So let's just talk about one that could potentially give you an opportunity to work in Utah if you don't have Utah experience. And that is the Great Basin. So if you have experience in Nevada or some parts of California, and you can establish that experience, then you can provide that to the state of Utah and say, I have this experience that this same region overlaps Utah, and you can request. You may not get it, but you're going to have a better chance of getting it. So that the reason I'm saying that is that don't shut down your opportunity to work in a state just because you haven't worked in that state before. Because as we all know, the borders that we have right now are not the same borders, or there were no borders back then. And so that regional knowledge does overlap into other states. So use that to your advantage. We'll be right back with segment three. Welcome back to CRM Archaeology Podcast 312. And we are talking about diversifying your skill set, making sure that you can survive in this heap of a dumpster pile, like everybody says.
Burning dumpster fire.
Which is exactly.
It's an easy meme to put on your social media account and then complain about how terrible your life is. And it's, but we don't do that here. We don't do that here at the CRM Archaeology Podcast. We are here for solutions. And I love this topic about working in different states because I don't think about it very much. And I'm all about, get your skill set here. But man, if I was a young person just getting out with my BA, I would almost try to work in a different state. I did by accident, but not only will it just diversify your resume, which is so great, it'll give you knowledge on different geographic areas, whether it be the desert or the coast or whatever. These are all just great things to do. Again, I accidentally got some of that experience. Like for me, working on the California-Arizona border, I found out that I really enjoyed the desert, like working in the desert. I didn't think I would. So if I had a choice, I probably would not have made the choice to work in that area. But that's where the job was. And I ended up really liking it. And since I didn't know anything about the area, I did a couple things. Look up some field reports from the general area just to get your mind on it. I remember I had a copy of just a book on North American archaeology, and I looked at the chapter on the desert just to give yourself a basic setup. You're not super duper fantastically knowledgeable about this area yet, and that's understandable. That's another thing I tell my students. I'm like, look, you're just starting out. I don't expect you to be some genius on brownware pottery of the Southwest. But I expect you, Heather, as you said before, I expect you to be open-minded and willing and want to learn about brownware pottery of the Southwest. But so I would say for young people, definitely look across the state line, look across the country and be ready to learn about those. Keep an open mind because you might really like areas that you think you won't.
And also really, oh my gosh, it's so funny because we go to school, we're anthropologists, we're archaeologists. We know that the borders that we have now in the U.S. do not translate to the way people moved.
You are just dropping some knowledge on me. Really? What?
But this is basic 101. But when we get into this business of CRM, we get in this idea that we cannot work outside of the states that we already have experience. It's like craziness. So
It gets factionalized into like company on company violence. You know what I mean? It's so silly. It's, oh, I can only work here for them and not over there for them. It's so small minded. It's broaden out, my friend.
And I think some of it might be because in right now, the way that this works, as far as getting work, like we were saying, being able to be authorized to work in different states have regulations. They have to. It's required, right? Part of NEPA is, and the facilitation of NEPA is that each state has its way of making sure that it's compliant, that these projects are compliant, adhered to NEPA properly. So in order to do that, there needs to be some kind of organization of how that happens, whether it's permitting and all sorts of being licensed or allowed to work in certain states. But for the most part, that relates to principal investigators. For the most part, that does not relate to the people that are working in the field and doing the work outside of the principal investigator or maybe the crew supervisors. There are BLM land has, and BLM across the country has regulations on, in order for you to have a BLM permit, you have to have crew supervisors have to have a specific permit. So it isn't just principal investigators. But with that, that's a small part of the work that we do, archaeologists do in the United States. So here's the other thing is remember that when you're working for a company, there's a lot of companies that really, they don't diversify. They get a lot of work in one area. So it's easy for you as an archaeologist, if you don't have experience with another company or in another region or in another type of archaeology, you may think that's all there is. So for example, if you work for a company that is a DBE, a disadvantaged business enterprise, those DBEs get a lot of their contracts based on being a subconsultant to a prime, to a larger company. And it's usually engineering companies. So when there's a contract with a large federal agency, a certain percentage of that contract must be given to DBEs. That's just a requirement. So a lot of times these larger engineering firms want to have these larger, very lucrative projects, but they don't, they're obviously not a DBE. So they go and they look for services that they can use DBEs as a subconsultant. And many times that's cultural. They bring on these small businesses, the DBEs, to come in and to, and it could be a veteran-owned business, could be a woman-owned business, lots of different types of DBEs. And they use them for the cultural portion. So if you work for a project for a company, like that's where they're getting likely going to get a lot of their work. And what is that going to be? It's federal work. So maybe you're doing a lot of BLM work. So don't get yourself stuck in that mindset that the way that work goes on BLM property, for instance, just an example, is the way CRM is across the board. It's not. It's just a fraction of CRM.
What that is, I just want to break in for a second and double down on what you just said. It's that is something I see so many people do wrong in just in archaeology in general. It can be CRM. It can be academic archaeology, where there isn't just one way to do the thing. Don't come at me and be like, but this is how we did it under Professor Morrison's class. I'm like, I don't care. Right. We have a certain way to do it. And it's this way. And that's another thing you can get from working state to state is you can cherry pick the things that you think are best for your own research or something for later. You'd be like, oh, in California, they do it this way. And that's really great. But over here in Maryland, they do this. And that part's really good. And you can keep the good and throw away the bad. So, yes, there is not one way to do this.
Right. Don't limit yourself for work. Yeah. I do hear it a lot, especially people that have been working for the same company. First of all, there's one thing, obviously, you don't want to go in and start working for another company and say, well, this company, we do it this way. You know? Right. that's just soft skills that you shouldn't be doing. You know, just don't do that. But the other thing is don't also, even if you're saying it in your mind, don't let that enter your mind. Be willing to look at different perspectives. Again, hello, this is an anthropological concept that you learned in school that you can be, these are like life practical lessons that need to be applied in your career as well. This isn't just about, don't look at different perspectives.
But see, the problem is that when people go into anthropology, the study of humans, it's because they have no idea about their own humanity. Yeah. So they have no idea what they're doing. So just so you know, anthropologists have no idea about fellow people. Right.
It's just like what people go to get a psychology degree. Yes. Because they're trying to figure out their own issues.
Because right? They're all crazy. Yeah, yes. It's the same thing. So we right. need to keep that underneath it all. Anyway.
So I think just always have an open mind. There's so many different yeah. things that you don't know about this discipline already. And just remember, be cautious in that your knowledge is limited. Even though you may think that you've been, even somebody's been working in this job for 30 years, if you've been working in this job for 30 years, doing the same kind of work for the same kind of companies or for one company, I'm telling you, your experience is vastly smaller than somebody who's worked for several different companies in several different states. It just is. The more experience you get, the more practical knowledge you're going to have and the more useful you're going to be. You want to be multiple. You want to be flexible in your thinking. You're going to be a much more valuable worker if you
right.
you have those other experiences. And even if you get experiences, I think even the bad experiences, of course, the bad experiences oh, yeah. are also great learning opportunities of what not to do. Yeah. And just that's the one thing I see. There are so many know-it-alls in our business.
I know. And that's the thing. It's like a lot of the stuff we've been talking about sounds like cliches. Keep yeah. an open mind, but it's yeah. so true. And yes. at the same time, if you've spent any time in CRM, we yes. all know the old crotchety guy yeah. who thinks he knows everything, who like does not tell you anything about right. his knowledge. And then you also realize that his knowledge actually is probably not even that great because yes. it's based on stuff he learned in 1974. So don't be that guy. We all right. know that guy. It's like every project has to have that guy. Don't be him. And if you think about it consciously, it's easy to not be that guy.
It is. And definitely you want to be knowledgeable. You want to yeah. read up and do your homework, but you still have to be flexible. So you still have to be willing to say three words. I don't know.
Yep.
Then you can go and find out what you don't know and learn it. As far as working across states, there's also, like I was mentioning, California, there's different. You could go and just work private projects or development projects on private land for your entire career and you'd have enough work. But mm-hmm. if you have an opportunity to work on a project that is on BLM land, or you have a project, yeah. an opportunity to work on a project that's with state parks, these things or national parks and any of this kind of work, the more work that you can have. So you're not just looking at geographically you want to diversify, but you want to work diversify with respect to the different types of regulatory agencies. So federal work, you want to work on federal projects, you want to work on state projects, and you want to work on private projects. So mm-hmm. diversify yourself in that way. And again, I can't say it enough. Now's the time to do that. I think a lot of people have the reverse idea that, oh, I'll be able to get more experience when I'm at a higher level or I have yeah. a higher degree. No. Yeah. Now's the time you're going to be able to get the experience because companies are desperate. They need people and they need a lot of the lower billing category. So mm-hmm. take advantage of that now. You also, many people just coming out of college, you know, of course, people want to, some people really just to travel, but a lot of people want to just stay in their home base. And I understand that. Understand yeah. you want to be a homebody. I get that. But now while you're young and you're not married, you don't have children, you don't have things that are going to tie you more so at home. Now take the opportunity to get as much experience as you can across the United States. And here's the other thing is that when you're putting in resumes, so you're going to say, okay, Heather, I'm going to go and put in a resume at all these companies all over the US and then crickets. I don't hear anything. I've got news for you, especially the bigger companies. You have HR that they don't know anything. And they're the ones that are going through. They just are. They're going through and they're looking and they're seeing, oh, you don't have any experience in California. So we're not going to hire. And so they literally will remove you from the list before the person who's hiring, the actual archaeologist that's hiring, gets to see you on the list. So follow up your resume and your application, find that person. You may not know who the hiring person is, but go online and look if they have the somebody who's in charge of the cultural department, whatever you can find, go and do, or maybe sometimes you can't find the cultural department because a lot of these companies do not put on their website who's in charge of what. The larger the company, the less information. Yeah. But you can see sometimes it'll say Santa Barbara, let's see, Santa Barbara office, okay, or the Arlington, Virginia office. You go and you find who the contact is for that Arlington, Virginia office and you email them. They may not be an archaeologist. Yeah. That's okay. Just saying, I just put in my application. I'm very eager to work for your company. Say all the things they want to hear. And then and that will give you a much better chance of getting forwarded on to.
Yeah, I think that's a great little data point there. Definitely. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, to just get in touch with that office, like that office.
And it's personal. Fine.
Yeah.
Be personable. Do not, please, please do not go and generate an AI.
Oh my God. Letter. Yeah. Okay. Good Christ. No.
The more that you say, don't try to be something you're not, because right. people with more experience can smell it a mile away.
Yeah.
Just be honest with who you are. I am a hungry new archaeologist. I'm willing to go wherever you want me to go. Yeah. I just want to learn. I want to have an opportunity with a good company. Please give me an opportunity.
Yeah.
Trust me. People want to make people happy. Mm-hmm. Even the crotchety old archaeologists.
Yeah.
Deep down inside, they want somebody who's eager.
There's good inside them. There's still good inside them somewhere. Yes.
Even though sometimes the more crotchety they are, the softer they are.
That's true.
That's
so true.
They're trying to push people off because they are really a soft heart and they don't want to be taken advantage of.
What's funny is, Heather, you and I are probably thinking about the exact same three people.
No. Yes. I'm thinking of one. I'm only going to say the initials AK.
Yeah. Hey, those are my initials. Oh my God. Now, it all makes sense now. That's so hurtful. Yeah. So hurtful. Oh, I was going to say one more thing on saying, I don't know. I totally agree with you being able to say, I don't know. But especially for young people, saying I don't know doesn't mean, and therefore I do nothing. You know what I mean? If you don't know, say, I don't know. But if I had to do this, I would think I would do it like this. Or I don't know, but please show me how to do this. I'm like ready to do this. Don't be like, I just don't know. I just don't know how to do that. Then
And take it even one more step. Try, I don't know something. First thing, it triggers in your head. I don't know how to do this. Okay. Before you open your mouth, say, I don't know how to do it. Okay. How could I do it? Just like you said earlier. So find the solution. You have a problem. Try to find the solution. May not be the right solution, but at least you're trying to find it. Okay. And then come to them and say, okay, I don't know how to do this, but if I were to do this, just like you said, if I were to do this, is how I'd go about doing it, so that they know that you're not just sitting there expecting to be fed everything.
And you know what? I've had people actually do that for me before, and sometimes they come up with way better, more creative solutions than I had. I'm like, that's genius. Good for you. So, absolutely. Yeah.
I think hopefully this was productive. I think it was. I learned something from it.
I did too.
I think maybe we talk a little bit more about specifics in states on another episode. But for now, please go take this information, go forth, be hopeful. You can have a very terrific and successful career in CRM. I know I say this, Andrew and I say this all the time, but it's only because people are saying all the time that you can't. And I want to encourage you to go out, look for other opportunities. And you know what? If you have any questions, we have these different groups in our member area, or even if you're not a member of the APN, you can contact us. And if you have other ideas of what you think we can cover, please do. But if you have questions just about your own career, we're always happy to help.
That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRMArcPodcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question in a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at archpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about.
We will see you in the field. Goodbye.
See you guys next time.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.